Hello, good evening. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews and welcome to the BizNews Briefing. In tonight's top story, we talk to ace retail analyst Evan Walker about the biggest listing to hit the JSE in many a day. Boxer is being spun off from Pick n Pay. Evan was at a presentation today to see what gives. He'll be giving us his unique insights. And then in our special feature, well, we get an insight from our partners at the Financial Times of London on Elon Musk and what exactly Elon Musk is going to be doing in the White House. First up, as per usual, let's have a look at the way that the markets performed. And here on the JSE, well, it hasn't been quite as good as what we've seen in international markets. And that's because the resources sector has been under a lot of pressure, and it continues. Although today it was flat for both industrials and and financials, the resources sector on the JSE was 3.5% lower. The rand also came under pressure against the US dollar. Flat against the pound, 23.10, it's a 3-cent decline. But against the US dollar, the mighty greenback, which just gets stronger and stronger. And if you've been reading BizNews Premium recently, you would have seen that there is quite a lot of insight from our partners at The Economist who say that it's likely that when Donald Trump applies the issues or the policies that he has in mind, that the dollar will get stronger still. Seems like somebody's listening to The Economist. The rand going back above 18 to the dollar, 18.08 at the moment. A little bit of, regression, if you like, for Bitcoin, but it's going up so fast, you hardly know what's happening there. It's trading at just under $87,000 right now, over 1.5 million rands. And that is a decline on the day of 1.5%. But it got above $90,000 in trade in New York last night. As far as the individual share prices are concerned, good move for Bidcorp. That was the best performer on the JSE of the major stock, 6% higher. Lewis, which is one of the favorites of a number of our market commentators, Pete Viljoen and Andrew Vincent in particular. Pete has said at a number of the BizNews conferences that Lewis was a good one to invest in. I hope that as a member of the BizNews tribe, you are there. Vodacom getting back a lot of the losses of a couple of days ago, and Telkom was up by 2.3%. The big losers were primarily in the resources sector, 5% lower Gold Fields, 4.5% AngloGold Ashanti, and 4.5% for Anglo American PLC, which is a member of the BizNews portfolio. ArcelorMittal was down by 4.5%. So not all is sweet in the steel world right now. The latest on Wall Street right now, the S&P 500 index is very slightly lower. NASDAQ unchanged and the Dow off by about a third. Of the stocks in the portfolio, in the BizNews portfolio, MicroStrategy has been unbelievable. It was up 25% yesterday. This is a play on Bitcoin. It's got about, it's worth now about 50, well, it's over $50 billion. It's got about $20 billion worth of Bitcoin. So the people who are buying MicroStrategy really believe that Michael Saylor, the founder and CEO, is going to be doing magic stuff there. And then Tesla, after its magnificent run recently, was down by 2.5% at the moment. So we don't know how long that's going to last, of course. Who knows with Tesla? But let's talk about a big stock. It's going to be a big stock here in South Africa. Evan Walker from 361 is with us. Evan, you spent a bit of time today looking deeper into Boxer. You've been telling us recently that Boxer is going to be a stock that you're going to want in your portfolio. Just tell us what a little bit of the rationale there and where it comes from.
Hi, good evening, Alec. Boxer is actually a business that has been around since 1977, KZN, Richard Bay based. Pick n Pay acquired the business with about 50-odd stores in 2002. That was probably the best acquisition that Sean Summers ever made, given the expense and the expansive growth over the years and just how good a business this Boxer business actually is. As we know, it's It's a sort of hybrid, deep discount retailer situated predominantly in the rural areas, with its strength obviously being KZN, Mpumalanga, etc., but now expanding quite rapidly into the Western Cape. And with a store profile that looks like they can add approximately 30 to 40 new stores per year for the next couple of years going forward, which is roughly about 3 to 4% space growth in actual just dry grocery stores, and then about an additional 30 to 40 liquor stores, which now accompany, and we've seen all the other retailers do it, accompany their standalone base of stores across the country. So, you know, this is going to be a business that, for the first time, we're going to have direct access to the bottom end of the market, or the bottom to lower middle end of the market in South Africa. We've obviously got access through ShopRite, but not direct access, because you're getting the exposure through Checkers, you know, USave and ShopRite. So this is a new listing that's going to be around about 25, 26 billion rand. So it's a sizable listing for the SA market. But I think what's attractive here is the fact that it's going to have, you know, visibility around, certainly around 3 years of growth rates in the 10 to 15% mark.
So why is Pick n Pay halving it off, given that it is a gem, as you've explained?
Yeah, unfortunately, Pick n Pay came into this year with approximately 8 billion in debt. A loss-making Pick n Pay supermarket business, as we know, underperforming quite badly. Bad reinvestment decisions over the years. Sean came in to resurrect the business. He's done a lot around closing underperforming Pick n Pay stores. But in order to restore the Pick n Pay balance sheet, they did a rights issue of approximately 4 billion earlier in the year, just to restore liquidity for the existing Pick n Pay business. And this is the second phase. So this now will bring, you know, in the region of about 8 to 9 billion, approximately 8 billion into the Pick n Pay balance sheet. That'll give them a fresh balance sheet, a fresh start, you know, and hopefully the ability for Sean to resurrect the Pick n Pay brand over the next couple of years. I think it's definitely doable with balance sheet on your side. Obviously, it's going to be a hard ask given the slippage that we've seen in market share from Pick n Pay. But, you know, I think, with a more aligned store base, with a better offering, and they have got a very good clothing business in Pick n Pay, you know, certainly we're hoping the prospects of profitability over the next 2 years, you know, is on our side.
He must be quite a guy, Sean Summers, because he did this deal, which is now, in many ways, rescuing Pick n Pay from a terrible situation that it's in. As you say, big losses there, heavy debt. And had Sean Summers not done the deal back, 20-odd years ago, they wouldn't have had this asset that they could have sold off. But my question has to be, if the rest of Pick n Pay has been so badly managed while Summers wasn't there, why wasn't Boxer contaminated by that?
That's a great question, Alec. I think, you know, I think for Boxer, they had a very set profile of what they wanted to do. They run a very, well, no business is easy, but they run a very simple retail philosophy. They run 3,000 KVIs, known value items, to the consumer. They run as I said, a deep discount format. They try, obviously, keep pricing, you know, at the forefront of their business. They run a very lean operating model in terms of their cost structure, obviously their base, their distribution base. So they really try to keep costs low in their business. No frills, no fancy counters, no big delis, no big butcheries. I mean, they do offer that, but no, not the frills that you and I used to in a Woolworths or a Super Spa or even a Pick n Pay or a Checkers, you know, and that. So they run a very low-key operation, and in order to penetrate the market, both the informal market and obviously, you know, the big rural markets that sit out there, this offering has certainly worked to the public, and it comes across really as price predominant. You know, that's their leading edge in this market. It's just holding margin, obviously buying in huge bulk, sticking with the bulk. In fact, you know, using the opportunity of their balance sheet to, you know, buy into big promotions with all the manufacturers in South Africa, and often holding more stock, but then have the ability to service the customer with lower prices. So it's been a business that's just been well run. You know, hats off to them that Pick n Pay actually never meddled in the business throughout the years. I think they realized it was a business that was on a perfect trajectory. They didn't have to do anything to the business. They didn't have to meddle. I think they do offer good services to the business. What was quite enlightening to me today was the fact that, you know, how skilled they are in, you know, the service element of the market, which has become so, so apparent over the years. You know, all the money transfers, all the banking. They were explaining to us today that you can open a bank account within 2 minutes in a Boxer branch with, you know, with different types of banking. I mean, obviously, you can redeem your grants, you can draw cash, you can deposit into a bank account. So they're certainly at the forefront of offering all the technological angles of retail right up there with their big major competitors. And in the last month or so, they've now gone out and offered a loyalty program as well to sort of challenge the likes of the other big competitor in the market. So they're certainly, you know, doing whatever they have to in retail. I think they've got a footprint. They've definitely got a big footprint, which is going to grow. And that element of the market where I think there's still, you know, like this, you know, we call this rural informal population market in South Africa. We just don't know enough about it. I think it's much bigger than we estimate. I think population size of South Africa is much bigger than we think. And certainly this informal market and the market out there still has a lot of capacity to grow. And obviously, the more formalized retailers can take share from more informal-based retailers in the market.
Well, I'm looking forward to talking to Gigi Alcock about Boxer, because that's an area, the informal sector, he knows very well. But if you consider, as a South African investor, as the tide rises or raises all ships, would you say that when it's listed, and maybe you can tell us exactly when that's going to happen, that it would be for a long-term investor in South Africa, one of those stocks you must put into your portfolio?
Look, I think so, because, I mean, you know, these very good business models. I mean, you spoke about Bidcorp earlier. I mean, that's a stock that we just think everyone should have in the portfolio, some Bidcorps. And we just think it's a fantastic business. You know, ShopRite is one of them. Clicks, we've spoken about, is one of them. And I think Boxer can certainly, you know, step up. You might find a little bit of, you know, frenzy at listing. The listing is due for the 28th of November. You might find a little bit of opening frenzy. You know, I would probably wait, let the markets, it's already, you know, I think three times oversubscribed from obviously, you know, the institutional investors alone. So I think there could be a little bit of frenzy. I don't think you dive in at the onset, but I think you wait. There's always, you know, market. You know, one thing we've learned, Alec, in 25, 30 years of doing this job, you get a second and third chance at everything, you know. And I think, this is certainly a stock to me that's got, a couple of very, very strong structural underpins. So, you know, they're going to pay out a dividend. They're going to de-gear this business quite quickly. And there's enough propensity to grow in that end of the market just with the plans that they've got aboard already. So I think this is something you could quite comfortably sit back with, you know, just take the dividend, watch, and then just watch the growth of this over the next 3 to 5 years. But I'd be a little cautious just at the onset because it is a big listing. You know, institutional investors are very hungry to get their hands on something new in their portfolios. As you know, it's a market where we haven't seen new listings for a long time in South Africa. I mean, I think there was speak about getting Coca-Cola back, but we haven't heard anything more. And obviously, we're still waiting to see what happens with the outcome of this multi-choice, you know, potential Canal Plus reverse listing on the JSE. You know, but there's been very little additional offers for us as institutional and unit trust investors.
Evan Walker is with 361. Thank you, Evan, for putting getting our radar working now on a stock that, as he says, you got to put into your portfolio. I like that idea about Bidcorp as well. Well, onto our special feature now. And our partners at the Financial Times of London had a close look at what the Pretoria-born Elon Musk is going to be doing with his new bromance pal, Donald Trump. It's fascinating insights. Elon is really going to the front of the stage. Let's have a look.
Oh, let me tell you, we have a new star. A star is born, Elon.
When Donald Trump declared victory in the presidential race, one of the first people he publicly thanked was Elon Musk.
Now he's an amazing guy. We were sitting together tonight. You know, he spent 2 weeks in Philadelphia and different parts of Pennsylvania campaigning.
And not only that, Musk also poured millions of dollars into getting Trump elected. And it paid off. Under the new administration, the Tesla CEO is set to gain a lot of power. The FT's Stephen Morris is here to unpack what Musk's America might look like. Hi, Stephen.
Hello.
So just how involved was Musk in this presidential election?
Well, Musk has been slowly drifting to a variety of right-wing causes for a little while now, but it wasn't until after the attempted assassination of former president and president-elect Trump in July that he really got involved in a major way. He endorsed him, and then he just started throwing his personal celebrity behind getting Trump elected. And he contributed more than $100 million to America PAC, which was a lobbying group he set up to support Donald Trump. So we're really talking about substantial sums of money and incredible amounts of his time.
Now, you mentioned that Musk has been moving toward right-wing causes for a while now, but what do you think ultimately drew him to Trump's side?
I think it was a constellation of factors. Ideologically, Musk is very anti-woke and pro-free speech, and I think he thought the Democratic Party had veered quite sharply to the left on those issues. But let's not overlook the very concrete business interest here. Musk runs Tesla. He runs SpaceX, which pretty much runs the US space program at this point. And then, of course, X, the social media platform. All of these companies face significant regulatory probes, legal challenges, and obstacles to growing and becoming more profitable and powerful.
Outside of his companies, what role is Musk expected to take in the next Trump administration?
As anything with President Trump, it's very unclear, but Musk hosted an interview with him in August where he repeatedly brought up this idea of a Department of Government Efficiency, looking at how taxpayer monies were spent and how regulations were imposed. And Trump has allowed him to speak pretty freely about wanting to slash $2 trillion from the US budget, firing thousands of people from the vast federal bureaucracy, and eliminating a wide range of regulations, which he blames for stifling American innovation. And we've already had a couple of concrete pieces of evidence that Musk is trying to put his people into government and get directly involved himself. The first one is a call with Ukrainian President Zelensky on Wednesday. And secondly, he's tried to get some of his staff at SpaceX inserted into the Department of Defense, which gives billions of contracts a year to SpaceX. So Musk has shown already that he is prepared to be extremely involved.
So, Stephen, if Musk does end up succeeding in slimming down the federal bureaucracy, how do you think all of that would reshape corporate America?
It's much easier to go into Tesla and fire 14,000 people than it is to go into huge government departments and fire big groups of people. So it remains to be seen just how effective Musk can be in this advisory role. But there are various appointments, heads of department, that could be very symbolic and could set the tone for the rest of the country, replacing the head of the senior leadership of things like the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, the Securities Exchange Commission, and the Department of Justice. Whoever leads these departments will set the tone for what cases and what rules those departments choose to pursue and what they choose to abandon.
Stephen Morris is the FT's San Francisco Bureau Chief. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to our partners at the Financial Times of London. And that was Sonia Hudson, the anchor of the FT News Briefing podcast, talking to, as she said, the San Francisco Bureau Chief, Stephen Morris. And well done to the team, the Biz News team, for putting together such a fascinating clip. It's interesting when you see it in with your own eyes, what's going on with Elon Musk and how he's been behaving with Donald Trump. Well, Trump does come up a little bit later in our news headlines, obliquely. But just to pick up on the Banxo story now, you might have been following on Biz News that there is an organization that has benefited from deep fake ads. These adverts all over the internet were purportedly with people like Musk, Johann Rupert, Nikki Oppenheimer, telling you that if you followed their advice, you too could make a lot of money. Banxo says it wasn't them. They say that somebody was abusing their system. But we've had other insights which suggest that Banxo is not exactly the kind of top-class financial services business that it would like to project itself as. On this program a few weeks ago, we had a victim telling us her harrowing story of how her life savings had been taken out. Now, the interesting thing about that was this happened after the Financial Services Conduct Authority had stepped in and suspended Bankso's license. In other words, said, Bankso, you may not operate anymore. And yet this BizNews community member was very much pulled into the Bankso orbit and operated on, if you like, by some pretty sharp people. Let's hear what our Christine, who has been following the story, can tell us about the latest update on Bankso.
The Western Cape High Court has set aside a preservation order on Bankso's bank accounts. However, the court also ordered that Bankso shall not withdraw or allow the withdrawal of any funds in the bank accounts, other than for purposes of migrating clients to an alternative financial provider that is authorized by the Financial Sector Conduct Authority. These latest developments were confirmed today in an update from the FSCA on its ongoing investigation into Bankso. The FSCA also confirmed that it was investigating statements from clients of Bankso who maintained that Bankso is continuing to conduct financial services business, notwithstanding the withdrawal of its license.
Now, what all of that means is that Bankso, by the way, did also issue a statement to say it hasn't been operating, but there might have been some bad actors who were using its name. What it all means is that there is a preservation order. It's like what happened with Marcus Yuster, you might recall, when the revenue SARS authorities arrived at his home. They wanted to make sure that he did not dispense with any of the assets that were in the home. So they got an order to make sure that all of those assets were preserved. It feels like ancient history now with Yuster having committed suicide and departed us some while ago. But it's a similar kind of thing. They now want to be sure that if any Bankso client wants to get their money out, that is the only exception for Bankso bank accounts being able to be accessed. So it isn't that Bankso's back in business, not at all, but that is where the story is. There's legal issues, there's all kinds of stuff happening there, but it just reminds you that you've got to be so careful when it comes to your own money and the way that you use it. Something else we've got to be careful about is climate change, climate warming. Right now, in a place called Baku in Azerbaijan, there is a meeting of most countries on the climate change agenda. South Africa's got a very strong delegation there, as some members of the Government of National Unity will be attending for the first time. But there's a lot of concern about Donald Trump reoccupying the White House. That concern is not shared just yet by the president of the World Bank, AJ Bunga, who spoke on the sidelines of COP29. Let's hear what he had to say.
Even though President-elect Donald Trump is not actually physically present, there's concerns that the U.S. may cease to lead the way on some of these climate discussions and withdraw.
I think the way to think about this is he won an election, respect that vote, and let's start thinking about what he does as compared to what we all think he will do. That speculation isn't going to get us anywhere. Yeah. Let's watch his actions, watch his deeds, and work with him on explaining why these things are good for American business, for European businesses, and for everybody else. I think that's a far more constructive way of engaging with this administration.
Thanks, Mr. Bunga. That is really the more constructive way. There's been so much speculation about what Trump is going to do, and not a heck of a lot of insights on, what he might actually do. So he has been putting his some very interesting people into senior positions or appointing. They are going to be coming in January when there is a changing of the guard. And there's a lot of articles on that on BizNews, and particularly in BizNews Premium if you are interested there. As far as the local business news is concerned, MultiChoice, we did mention it earlier in the discussion with Evan Walker from 361. Its financial results for the half year to end September came out today. Ooh, ugly stuff. Revenue down 11%. Doesn't sound too bad, excepting when you look at the operating profit, that's the top line, was down 49%. And the loss in the 6 months has ballooned from 1.3 billion rand to 1.8 billion rand. MultiChoice is investing heavily into Showmax, and whether or not that's going to pay off, well, it will depend on what Canal Plus, which is a French business, which also has lots of operations in Africa. In fact, between the two of them, MultiChoice and Canal Plus, they pretty much have the satellite TV operations in Africa. But of course, that was carved up between them before Netflix, Apple TV, Disney Plus, and others entered that market. So it's a different ball game now. MultiChoice, of course, also has told the market about the concerns and the issues that are going on. So its shares were actually up today by 0.25%, which is unusual when you get such a poor set of results. But it was widely anticipated. The food company Premier also released interim results today. That's for the 6 months to end September. This one was the other way around. Fabulous numbers. Headline earnings per share, 483 cents a share against 330. They are telling shareholders there's going to be a bumper dividend for the full year. They don't pay an interim dividend. And the share price down by 0.5%. Well, you know, you pays your money, you takes your chances. Well, that's it for the Biz News briefing for today. Thank you very much for being with us. Watch out for us tomorrow at 6 o'clock. We will be here on your favorite channel. If you're watching live, that means Biz News TV on YouTube or the live stream on Iono if you are listening. Until then, from technical producer Ruan Erasmus, executive producer Lucy Ferreira, and yours truly, Alec Hogg, cheerio.